Okay, so all the words on this slide here. This was the title of a workshop that we held back in November at Caltech with about 45 people or so, trying to think, and it's relevant to this topic here, which is why I'm actually reporting on it. And we were trying to think of ways that we could do exoplanet observations of some sort, or particularly spectra, with things that are one step or a couple steps short of a whole space mission. So we were talking about balloons, aircraft, and stuff like that. I'll go through it quickly here. But that was the idea. And so we were trying to find out what kinds of observations could be made from the part of the solar system that is very, very close to or in the atmosphere of the Earth. So it fits in with this conference, okay? And it was also sponsored, as Dave said, by some of the same people, by the, you gotta get your acronym straight here. It was sponsored by the Keck Institute for Space Studies, KISS, which is actually paid for by the Keck family and foundation at Caltech. And then, of course, there's Kavli, which is a totally separate thing, but there is a connection of the personnel back and forth here. So it was suggested, Tom Prince, who runs the Keck Institute, suggested that and has a connection up here, and he was interested in helping fund some kind of workshop that we could have up here, which is now this one here. So we searched around for a topic, and we came up with this particular topic. Okay, so let me just sketch the workshop a little bit. Our purpose was to generate new ideas for exoplanet observations using near-term platforms. So like I said, that means aircraft or balloons and so on. And then this was a little bit of what we did. We had a short course, and we looked at the platforms. We invited people that really understood a lot of these things, and we actually generated some material that is all online and can be found. This lasted for Tuesday through Friday. We had, you know, it was actually a very busy 4 days. We had somebody from JPL that actually took pretty good notes during the whole meeting, so if there was something that we wanted to go back and check on, it is all sitting online on the website. And I was mentioning at that point related events, which includes this meeting, or what was the meeting that was up here, the theory and observations of exoplanets. I can't even spell. Theory and observation of exoplanets, which Kristen in the back row was running up here a couple of weeks ago. So we are embedded within workshops this spring. There were a lot of people at the meeting. There's a place where you can find all the notes. These are the notes. We had a number of talks by people, and this is just to give you a flavor of what we were talking about. Chaz talked about debris disks. We had Lynn Hillebrand about the SOTIs. This is a short course at the beginning of the meeting, just to catch up people who were not exoplanet experts, but were like airplane experts or people from SOFIA or other places like that. So we had a quick sort of catch-up on astrophysics of exoplanets and some science schools. And here's an example. For the aircraft platforms, we had Tom Mace, who's the guy in charge of aircraft other than SOFIA that are sitting out at in the desert. I forgot the name of the place where it is. And then we had a lot of stuff on balloon platforms because I'm particularly interested in balloons, and there are experiments on suborbital rockets. Supriya Chakrabarty talked about, there is an actual experiment on a rocket that he and Mike Shaw are collaborating on. We also looked at commercial and military rockets. Some of this was a big surprise to me that there are actually platforms that are viable that we could consider, and that, as far as I know, nobody is thinking about putting something on. Let's see, Steve. Unwin here was you know, helpful in trying to figure out where we find these people, which, you know, was a whole new area to me. I never even thought about this. So we had this guy, Matt Isakowitz, talking about commercial rockets. Apparently there's a whole organization of rocket builders, and he is sort of like the Chamber of Commerce for these people, or the, you know, the promoter. And the interesting, all right, and Dan Belden talked about Air Force rockets, and this is interesting because there are, I forgot what it's called, it's an F ring or something like that. There's a ESPA ring, thank you, okay. There is a chunk of Air Force rockets on which you can put experiments, and they can go up and they can get themselves into orbit. And this is, far as I know, nobody's actually taken advantage of that, but it's something. You know about it? Okay, all right. There are fairly substantial chunks of space available on these rockets, and they're going to go up anyhow. So Joe Carroll talked about some of these things. Sorry? Yes. Yeah, I don't know if you detach or you stay with this ring. The ring is something like, you know, a couple meters in diameter. It's a big piece of metal. Yeah, I think so. We'd have to look at the notes. I don't remember. Yeah. It seemed like an exciting thing. And then there's the International Space Station, which, believe it or not, I mean, years ago I tried to put an experiment on the space station when I first came to JPL, and I was told, you know, we don't do that anymore. And now they're back in the business of trying to make the space station work and telling us that it's going to last forever. So things come and go. But the space station is an actually very interesting place to put stuff because it has platforms that are outdoors. You can put a telescope there, you know, like a meter diameter telescope, and you get power and telemetry. You don't have to do a lot of the thing, and pointing, well, some baseline of pointing. And then there are other things that are not quite so interesting. It turns out there's this airplane that flies up to 60,000 feet, the WV-57, and yeah, we don't really need that very much. Okay, so there were some things that were interesting and some things that were not so much, but, you know, hopefully we winnowed out some of the things that they are. All right, so this is the bottom line, and it may be my last slide. So the summary of the meeting, after we heard a lot of these talks, we tried to figure out what was interesting and what was not. It sounds like SOFIA may be useful. It isn't really clear exactly what it will do for exoplanets because it is flying along in the stratosphere, and it does bump a lot, and it does fly through water vapor that goes in and out. So we have to think about that, but that's your department, and we have, you know, it's up there, and it is absolutely going to be paid for the next whatever 10 years or so, but we have to think about it. Balloons are kind of interesting because they go up much higher. They go up to about four times the altitude of SOFIA, and so therefore they're above much more of the atmosphere. And there is this thing called ultra-long duration balloon flights, which people try to have. You know that they. There have been flights from the South Pole or from Antarctic that go around the South Pole for a week or 2 weeks and 56 days, okay, really long time. So you can do this in December and January if you can operate from the South Pole. If you're interested in looking for exoplanets, I can tell you that by my calculation at least, it's not easy to image an exoplanet from the South Pole because the sun is shining on the atmosphere that's still above you at balloon altitudes, which is less than 1% of the atmosphere, and it's too bright to image through. But there are other things that could be done from there. So a really long flight from there, you have power from the sun because the sun is on you continuously, and you have half the sky that you can look at. Suborbital rockets might be useful. This is the thing that Chakrabarty and Machal have an experiment on that's supposed to have flown several years ago and is still in the process of trying to get flown, but it's a coronagraph that would try to look at planets near stars. And like I said, the military rockets are available. I called it the F ring because I couldn't remember. It's ESPA ring. I don't even know what ESPA stands for, but commercial rockets, there's a lot of enthusiasm from the commercial rocket people, you know, because they think they're going to take over NASA's launch services. But it wasn't clear what's going to go on there. And I like the space station as a platform, even though it seems like a strange place. It's an interesting platform. So those are the kinds of things that we found from that meeting that could actually be done from the solar system, in other words, the Earth, for exoplanets. That's my presentation. So, any questions? Yeah.
What kind of scene do you get from the space station? Do you get like a structural vibration?
The space station, years ago I had heard that the space station is a terrible platform because it's vibrating and all of that, and we got actual numbers presented by this guy, Arvind Kronquist. And it sounds to me like it's much better than a normal ground-based observatory. It's not shaking and rattling and rolling that much. So.
You may need some
isolation with the microgravity experiment. We don't do microgravity, right? My impression was that it was sort of equivalent to a ground-based telescope. And it's much, much better than, excuse me, an airplane, which I have spent a lot of hours in. And that shakes the daylights out of your experiments. Yeah. Oh, wait, we should use the microphone. I'm sorry.
Was there any discussion of the instrumentation to go on to these various platforms?
No, the focus was mostly on the platforms, but people did talk about what it was you would put on them, you know, whether it would be a coronagraph or an interferometer. Did you have a more specific reason? I mean, for example, I think, well, somebody at least talked about the proposal that I have, which I have reproposed now again this spring, to put a coronagraph on a balloon platform. And the coronagraph would look at debris disks around stars. These have a contrast of about 10 to the minus 7 compared to the star. That's the reflected light hitting something like the debris disk out around Neptune. And that's just the reflected light off of the little rocks and bits of ice that are out there. And it's much easier to do than looking for a planet which has a contrast of like 10 to the minus 9 or worse. Yeah,
I just wanted to follow that up. For the SOFIA case, if I'm not mistaken, there's two instruments that are like ready to go and another half dozen in the pipeline. But when you're talking about using SOFIA, are you talking about using one of those instruments? Or are you talking about making your own? Because you have the opportunity in principle to start a new instrument for it if you could find funding, right? Because the timing is about right, but you'd have to do it now, right? So I'm not sure what you're talking about.
We will hear about this when you talk, right?
No, I wasn't talking about SOFIA, so we
can
do it now.
Oh,
okay. Maybe you can inform us.
All right, yeah, you're right. There are two, a couple of instruments that are existing now or that are built, and there is presumably money in the pipeline to build new ones. So this is for either of those.
Doing transit spectroscopy. You know, and the windows are accessible to SOFIA, and it may be hard, but that was what was discussed.
So the instrument that's on the plane right now is mid-infrared camera, and it has a GRISM. So that'll be the first one to try. And there's a call for proposals open right now. So next week we'll do the first light flight, and you can find out whether it sounds acceptable for that. So by July 30, you can propose to do that. The other instrument on the plane is probably right. That's going to go on next is probably not so useful. That's a submillimeter spectrograph. But for exoplanets, there's two other instruments besides the one that's on the plane now, which is the mid-infrared camera and GRISM. So the other two instruments are the high-speed photometer. So that'll be used for exoplanet transit observations. Should be excellent. Another 3 years. And then the other one is a near-infrared camera with moderate resolution spectral capabilities. All right, so Those are going to be there. So you were asking, so there's several instruments, and then the other one is a very high spectral resolution cross-dispersed shell spectrograph in the mid-infrared. So that'll be useful for some specialized things. If there were a very narrow feature predicted for an atmosphere and one did a transit observation, I don't think such exists. But if they did, then that there's a discovery space for that, something we didn't anticipate. So, and then you were mentioning calls for new instruments. So there's going to be a call for second generation instruments for SOFIA. There were 9 that went into construction. 1 was canceled last year. So there'll be a call for new instruments probably coming out in the coming year. And obviously exoplanets is a hot field, so you know, such an instrument would be good. But so you'd want to work around the phase space of ones that already exist. A high-speed optical photometer already exists, and a modest capability near-infrared instrument. But there probably is some phase space, a lot of phase space to work in. No. I'm not supposed to say. Well, I haven't thought about it enough yet. But the call's going out. It hasn't even been written yet. So it'll take months before the call goes out. Yeah, no, I mean it's a great topic, but I don't want to tip the scale at all. And I'd like to see well, you need to know whether we can actually do it, which we find out from the initial performance. And when we get the high-speed photometer. So then let me mention one other thing, which is something that that we have the capability for, which is optical imaging using the guider camera. And the good thing about that one is that it will, if there's any scientific interest, enough scientific interest from the community in that, we can have that available at all times on the plane. So in principle, one could flip a tertiary mirror, and then we would have an optical camera ready to go to do special events without having to take off the infrared instrument that's at the main focus. All right, so there's a sort of a secret slot there for a semi-scientific instrument, and exoplanets is the, well, that and KBO occultations, those are the main drivers for that. So we're going to try and get that into future calls for proposals, but it will need, if it does go out, it will need some proposal pressure to justify having it on the plane all the time. So that's the kind of thing. If there's opportunities, if there's a pressure for a certain target of opportunities, you know, critical timed events, and that case is made from exoplanet community, then that capability I know can happen. It's just a matter of time. I mean, it could probably happen in 6 months. And then we would have a camera available at all times, so if someone says this certain star is going to have its planet transit during a flight, then one leg of that flight can be usurped and taken over for this brief exoplanet observation.
Yeah, Charlie needs it. While you're going, I was going to comment. There's three areas that I think, you know, you might think about for the airplane to take advantage of what it does uniquely. One is you can fly anywhere above the clouds, so if you really have to have a transit and you don't want to wait for the next one, you can get above the clouds and you can for sure catch it. The second one is that in the airplane, you're above most of the water vapor, so if you want to do a near-infrared experiment to look at, you know, water or something that is absorbed in the lower atmosphere, it would be good to get above essentially all the water vapor in the airplane. And the third one I forgot, so.
I was just going to ask Bill to write a couple of paragraphs, maybe with URLs.